And welcome to Juno Afternoon. Today is Thursday, September 4th. My name is Shona Strasser. We have a great show lined up for you today, as we do every day here on Juno Afternoon. We'll talk with Boston Christopher about Perseverance Theater's upcoming production of An Iliad. Rachel Brown will be here to talk about AWARE's volunteer advocacy training beginning Monday. Chef Steph will be here talking about shortbread. Always good. Christy Nami Erickson will be here talking about her new place, Kindred Post. And, of course, we'll have Arts Up, as we do every Thursday. Writer's Almanac and more here on Juno Afternoon. But first, let's hear National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. An Alaska Native organization is in support of a court decision in a voting rights case. The Alaska Federation of Natives says it fully supports U.S. District Judge Sharon Gleason's decision in favor of plaintiffs in the case Toyokok v. Treadwell. The suit filed last year claims state officials have failed to provide language assistance to Alaska Native language speakers. In a partial ruling this week, Gleason agreed with Native voters that the state is not doing enough. AFM President Julie Kitka, in a statement, says this is a major step forward for Alaskan voter participation and says Native elders in the case rightly pointed out that the U.S. Voting Rights Act requires the state provide election material in Yupik and Gwich'in. The state says it has taken steps to help. Gleason gave the state until Friday to come up with remedies in time for the November election. The Administration for Children and Families announced Wednesday that Alaska tribes are receiving grants to help with language preservation efforts. The Yakutat tribe is one of them and plans to grow the number of language speakers by developing a program that focuses on teaching children. The language preservation grants for Alaska-based projects totals just over $1 million. Other grants are being awarded to the Gold Belt Heritage Foundation, the Alaska Native Heritage Center, and the Native Village of Kotzebue. An upcoming summit in Idaho will examine hunger and food security. Organizers are gathering research and best practices to develop programs and policies. As Deborah Smith with the Northern Rockies News Service reports, a Native American author and national television news correspondent is among presenters.
More than 250 people will be ready to tackle hunger and food security issues in Idaho. They'll be at a summit next month that's known for collaborating on solutions that include public-private partnerships. Hattie Kaufman will be there. She was the first Native American news correspondent for CBS and ABC, and she was born in Grangeville, a member of the Nez Perce tribe. Her experience of poverty in the early years is one that she wants to be inspirational and helpful for designing ways to reduce hunger.
We can grow from even the challenges that are facing us today when you see so many people who, despite having jobs, are still going to the food bank.
Kaufman is a featured speaker, and multicultural food security is one of the topics this year. Idaho Hunger Relief Task Force Director Kathy Gardner says those attending don't just go over the numbers. In past years, they've designed action plans to put into place immediately,
such as work on our Idaho Grocery Tax Credit, organization of our Idaho Farmers Market Association, and the only private sector SNAP education plan in the nation.
Many state and community leaders will be present, and invitations are extended to any Idahoan who has experienced hunger because their ground-level view could be key to coming up with solutions. The summit, Nourishing Idaho Together, is October 28th in Boise.
That was Deborah Smith reporting. Oklahoma Governor Mary Fallon announced Wednesday that the state has signed a vehicle tag compact with the Choctaw Nation. During the Choctaw's Labor Day festival over the weekend, the state and tribe signed the compact to establish how they will work together to issue the vehicle tags. Fallon says the state and tribe already are partners in economic development, education, healthcare, and infrastructure. She says this is another opportunity for state and tribal leaders to strengthen relations. Under the compact, Choctaw citizens who want to purchase a tag may go to a state tag agent and present their citizenship card. Choctaw Nation Chief Gary Batten says the tag is a way to show their heritage. It includes the words, "I am Choctaw," in the native language and features the tribal seal and stickball sticks, a traditional Choctaw game. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Supported by Sacred Wind Community Connect, providing scholarships and internet training to the Navajo Nation and Pueblo of Laguna in New Mexico. Sacred Wind believes broadband can reinforce Native cultures and offer means for self-determination. SacredWindCommunications.com.
Our democracy is a government of the people, for the people. Let's keep it that way. Vote on November 4th. Get registered. Cast your vote. It's that simple. More information at nativenews.net. Brought to you by the Carnegie Corporation of New York and Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
And thank you for tuning in to Juno Afternoon. It's Thursday, September 4th. My name is Shona Strausser. And in the studio with me right now, I have Boston Christopher, works for Perseverance Theater and also is doing quite an epic show. Welcome to the studio.
Thanks, Shona. Nice to see you, of course.
Of course. Full disclaimer, I have to do it every time.
Yeah.
I work at the theater, so I'm intimately involved with lots of theater there.
Intimately, like the back of your hand. Yes.
So, Boston, you are working on this, you know, I say epic because it really is, this epic production of an Iliad.
Yeah, it's based on Homer's The Iliad, which is, considered by many to be the oldest story in Western civilization in some ways. And it was an oral tradition for a long, long time, and it was handed down to people who would sing the song, and they would sing the song of the Iliad, which is about the Trojan War and Hector and Achilles, two great warriors. And at some point, a person who we call Homer wrote it down, and it has become a great piece of literature that's studied by many a folk, whether it be in high school or college. But it was a story that was meant to be told, to hear it orally. So Lisa Peterson and Dennis O'Hare, the two people who adapted the play, they went back to sort of that tradition of figuring out how to pare it down, because it is 16,000 lines of verse. It would take a long time to read the entire Iliad. And so they call it an Iliad because it's a version, but it's a very contemporized version of the play. And we can talk a little bit more about that, too.
You know, it's interesting because I think about Iliad and I think about war and I think about thousands and thousands and thousands of men at war.
Mm-hmm.
And this telling of this story is actually one man, and that one man being you.
Yes, that is me. And the tradition was that this would be a person who would maybe play an instrument and sing the song, actually sing the lines of verse. And so that's what they went back to, the people who wrote the play, to go back to figure out how can this story be told with one guy. So I play, I think it's about 15 characters total throughout the play. Hector, Achilles, Andromache. I play a baby at one point for just 2 seconds. But, you know, there's a lot of different characters that then you take on that persona. But really what it is it's this character of the poet. That's the character they chose to call. That's how they call this character. He's called the poet, and he shows up in basically an empty theater or a theater in transition. And he's there to tell this story. He's sort of a timeless wanderer. He's been going, you know, for the last 3,000 years, basically a witness to all of the wars throughout time. And he is, whether cursed or driven by the gods to continue to tell this story about the Trojan War, but in a way that now is contemporized. So he does things like he brings in the idea of, okay, you don't know who these men are, but you do know who the men and the boys from Ohio or from Nebraska or from, you know, Illinois or from Alaska, that kind of thing. So he really sort of brings it into this space, this time, tonight, with this audience. And it's very much sort of like sitting around a campfire and hearing somebody tell a story. And so that's really fun.
It's interesting also because in Iliad, it is a story of war, the
mm-hmm.
story of the Trojan War. And it definitely has a place in the here and now. And
mm-hmm.
I also feel like this poet is a person that does bring it to the here and now. And I was wondering what kind of, because you're up there all alone, and you're up there all alone for quite a while, but it's a really emotional journey. And how is that working for you?
Very much so. I mean, there's so many large events that happen. And I know during the preview last night, I got to, they've distilled the book, The Iliad, has 24 books. The play, An Iliad, has 7 parts. So they've sort of distilled it down. And I remember, I think I was in part 4, and I was thinking, oh my, I still have a ways to go in terms of just the emotional journey that you're on. You still have to do the big battle, you still have to do the death, you still have to do these different things. But with an audience there, you're sort of energized by, in a sense, sharing the story with them, sort of telling this story together, because they may or may not have heard this story. They definitely haven't heard it in this context. And again, it was, you know, the writer sort of wrote it out of, in a sense, a response to their impetus started years ago, I think back in the early 2000s, you know, with sort of the Iraq War and things like that, and how we were representing ourselves, and really our attraction to violence and rage, and both celebrating that, but also sort of examining that and really figuring out where does that come from in us and what makes us human and how do we touch base with that. And then maybe how could we let that go and figure out another way to be. And so that's sort of where the story and how it sort of constructs itself. But I do want to mention that there also are some very humorous parts to the play. So it's not just, you know, an hour, 45 minutes of like straight hardcore drama. There's a lot of fun in the poet himself, and how he relates to the audience. So that's kind of a good, fun relationship to explore.
I have to ask, out there all alone, as an actor, what is that like, and how do you keep kind of the home fires burning? As you said, the audience is a big pull, but how do you approach that kind of material? Because it's very different than talking with someone else on stage.
Yeah, well, luckily there's a very conversational tone to the piece, which allows you to sort of have that relationship. But I'm not really alone, because at one point a character that we call the musician or the muse appears, and that's Lucy Peckham, who has written and composed and sort of arranged various pieces of music on the cello. So she's actually with me live on stage playing the cello, underscoring certain parts of the piece or playing some sound effects. So there's no sound effects coming from an electronic thing. It's all coming from the cello. And so we kind of have a relationship too. So I can relate to her about certain parts about, you know, in the story, or so there's this, so I don't feel alone at all, even though I'm the only one speaking. But I don't feel alone, which is an interesting thing.
Yeah, I mean, you do have all those characters bouncing mm-hmm. around. You know, it's also interesting too, because I've done a lot of theater myself, mm-hmm. and a lot of one-person shows have characters that people kind of take on, and their whole body changes and their whole voice changes, and they become these other characters in a way that doesn't necessarily stem from themselves. Like, they mm-hmm. become these new people.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting, because in your approach, it seems like you are that, yes, you are taking the voice of these characters, but it still very much comes from this point of view of the poet.
Yes, it's very filtered through the poet himself and how he is sort of. So sometimes when I'm talking as the character, I'm also looking at the audience, sort of like, look at how we're telling this story. I'm being this guy, but you are seeing this with me. You're watching this guy. So there are some modulation in voice and physicality, but it's really about this poet telling the story. And really, his strong point of view about these events, and he has a pretty strong point of view.
In that way, it does seem like telling a story around a campfire.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah, very
because
much
you don't
so.
Actually take on as much. You might take on a hint of the physicalness or
mm-hmm.
a hint of the voice.
Yeah.
And
we could have gone further with that, I suppose. But I mean, the thing that first attracted me to the story when I found it, I don't know, a few years ago, and I just really, I love the art of storytelling, and I love the simpleness of that, and I thought this would be an amazing, it is an amazing script, and they've done a fantastic job sort of bringing in some of the verse from the Robert Fagel's translation, which is a very famous translation of the Iliad, and then also finding sort of this almost improvised sort of dialogue that the poet uses when he's relating to the audience. And so just that sort of like, you know, audience and a person on stage, and what is that relationship, and how do you travel through the journey of the night? It's pretty fun.
Is this your first one-man show?
I've done a couple. It was like 20 years ago, and they were Eric Bogosian one-man shows, and those have specific characters that are, like you saying, you take on a totally different voice and physicality, and there's like one character at a time telling their story or doing their thing. This is the first time I've done something like this, which is one person sort of exploring a story with an audience. And that was, those were 20 years ago, and my body has changed. So it's been a real interesting challenge to keep up with the physical requirements of doing this production. And, you know, I realized during rehearsal that I can't have a hamburger before the show. I definitely can't have pasta, you know, things like that. So it's been a journey for sure.
That's awesome. So this show opens?
It opens tomorrow night, which is September 5th, and we run for 4 weekends here in Juneau. We'll also be going to Anchorage, so if folks know people up there, you can let them know about it. And, of course, you can find out information on our website at ptalaska.org, or you can call 463-TIXS, or you can check it out at the bookstores, all the various different locations that you can do that kind of thing.
That's right. We changed our Sunday performances to 4 p.m.
Yes, that's right. That's a good thing to say, is that all Sunday performances are at 4 o'clock. And let's not forget to mention that this Sunday and next Thursday are pay-as-you-can performances. So if people want to come by and drop a few dollars in the bucket and then see a play, I mean, it's going to be pretty cool.
Yes, it is a tour de force, definitely. Boston Christopher, one-man show of an Iliad at Perseverance Theater. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks.
And here is John Elliott. You can check out John Elliott tonight as part of the KRNN concert series. He'll be performing at the Goldtown Nickelodeon doors at 6:30 p.m. There's only a few seats left, but here he is.
End of summer cigarettes, undercover backyard beds. Next to me the music plays, next to her it's better. Candy bars and shooting stars, endless fog and endless cars. I let her fall asleep so she wouldn't catch me looking. I was fine until I saw her in a dress, the week of end of summer cigarettes. I was fine until I saw her in a dress. An old friend came to visit me. I didn't see her coming. When I breathed through it was something like a high school football game. We took turns, we looked for signs. I knew that she would have to leave. I knew that we just couldn't be together anymore. I showed her. I shut the door and I was fine. Another life, another time. I showed her out. I shut the door.
And that is John Elliott. You can check him out tonight as part of the KRNN concert series. That's happening at the Goldtown Nickelodeon. It's going to be pretty cool. Irene Muller, local songwriter, is opening up for him, so definitely check that out. That's tonight. Joining me in the studio right now is Rachel Brown, here to talk about AWARE's volunteer advocacy training beginning Monday. Welcome to the studio.
Hi, Shona. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so what is AWARE advocacy training?
So this is something we provide twice a year, once in the spring and once in the fall. And it's about a 40-hour training, happens on evenings and weekends, and it's an opportunity for both people from the community and people working in organizations to experience a little bit about what AWARE does, why we exist, some of the services we provide, and then ways to sort of either inform the work that people are doing or advocate for people they know in the community who they'd like to support. So we talk about a variety of topics, introduction to concepts of domestic violence and how they affect our community, advocacy and sort of what that means, the role that we play as advocates at AWARE, how we interact with other agencies who support the population that we work with, and just a way for people to either become involved in AWARE as a volunteer, so actually becoming part of our team, or just taking out into the community and being a knowledgeable person who could be supportive of someone in need or who is interested in using it to inform their work. For example, sometimes a mental health provider or a medical health provider would take this training and then they would know a little bit more about these issues and it may serve the purpose for them in the work that they do.
For people who don't know what AWARE is here locally, can you talk about what AWARE does? Because it's pretty amazing stuff.
Great. Yeah, that's a great question. So AWARE does a whole bunch of things. We're mostly known for providing emergency shelter for women and children in the community who are experiencing violence. And we also provide a whole bunch of other services, including legal advocacy. We do a bunch of education, so we actually send our education specialist in the schools, starting at kindergarten all the way through the university, and talking to them about maintaining safe boundaries and healthy relationships, things like that. We have a couple of counselors who meet with kids who've experienced trauma, and we have a whole prevention team. So they do things like the Girls on the Run program, which is a really neat program that we offer here in Juneau, and working with different agencies in the community. We have a coaching boys to men program, so high school coaches who work with kids and are mentored by people that work at AWARE, and more. So that's just sort of the start of what we do. And right now as the volunteer coordinator, I also work with people in the community who are interested in helping us out. So we do a variety of things, and one exciting thing that's coming up for us is we're actually opening a transitional housing unit, and that's going to be open hopefully sometime early next year. And so we're going to be able to not only support people in crisis situations, but also help them have a place to stay and kind of get back on their feet
on
and make some forward movement.
Yeah. That's great. So it's interesting. I mean, it's great because you're going from, you know, people who are very young, from young children, and just kind of following people through the process. So that's lovely. Yeah.
Right. And, you know, it's neat because some of it's prevention and some of it's addressing crisis situations, and then some of it's sort of planning for the future and helping people feel successful, healing, and moving on and being successful in life.
So the advocacy training really is for anybody who wants to get involved and just wants more information and better tools to assist people.
Correct. Yep. And so it's offered to the whole community. Men and women take it. And we have it on evenings and weekends so that people who are working normal 9-to-5 jobs are also able to come. It happens sort of over the course of the month of September. So we start next Monday, the 8th. And we run Monday and Thursday evenings and then weekends through the month. So it ends on the 27th, which is a Saturday, towards the end of September. And, yeah, anyone is welcome. So if they want more information, they can get a hold of me. And our number at AWARE is 586-6623. And then they can also check out our website, which is www.awareak.org.
Is there a cost associated with this program?
We have a small materials fee. I believe it's $25, but that doesn't need to be prohibitive. So people will receive those materials even if they're unable to pay. And, yeah, people can pre-register or just get in touch with me and show up, and it'll be, you know, I'm going to provide the best that Costco offers in terms of snacks and just make sure it happens at AWARE in our conference room space, which is a really lovely place to be. So
after the advocacy training is over for the month of September, where do people see themselves fitting in the organization or as a volunteer?
Great, yeah. We have people help us out with a whole lot of things. We have some people who are particularly skilled in sort of cleaning and organizing projects, which as a small nonprofit is really helpful to us. We have a lot of mailings and different ways that we engage in the community, doing tabling events, things like that. We have volunteers who are really interested in doing those things. And then for a lot of people, it's a way to do things like take care of some community work service hours they might have. It's a way for people to kind of understand what it means to be an advocate. So we have a lot of people who take the training and then end up being a staff member on our team. We have both kind of part-time and full-time positions available. And then other people, it kind of helps them figure out, you know, if they kind of want to go do more case management kind of work with people, or if they'd really like to do direct service in more therapeutic settings. So it kind of helps define some of those things, and we can nurture the volunteer process for people after that. We also have right now a need for some child care volunteers. So if there's anyone who really enjoys hanging out with kids, that would be a great thing to do as well. And the training isn't required to be able to do that, but it does, like I said, set a really nice framework for ways that people can be involved with us.
What's the website one more time, just in case people want to get involved and get started on Monday?
Great. So www.awareak.org. And our number again is 586-6623.
Rachel, thank you so much. It's such a wonderful service that you all provide to our community.
Thanks for having me.
And here is Garrison Keillor with Writer's Almanac.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday, the 4th of September, 2014. 1888, on this day, Rochester, New York, George Eastman got a patent for his easy-to-use camera, the Kodak. The name didn't mean anything, just easy to remember. Google was first incorporated on this day, 1998, the brainchild of two Ph.D. students at Stanford, Larry Page and Sergey Brin. In June of 2006, Google was added to the Oxford English Dictionary as a verb. 1882, on this day, Thomas Edison switched on the world's first commercial electrical power plant. It was down on Pearl Street in Lower Manhattan. 6 steam-powered dynamos putting out about 100 kilowatts of electricity. Edison had already developed a long-lasting electric light bulb, and now he just had to find a way to create a demand for them. He flipped the switch, and the light came on in J.P. Morgan's Wall Street office at 3 o'clock p.m., and a reporter for the New York Post wrote that the light was perfectly pure. Nobody could tell if it was electricity or gas. It's the birthday of the novelist Mary Renault, born in Forest Gate, England, 1905, went to Oxford, studied with J.R.R. Tolkien, and then she fell in love with a woman named Julie Millard and began writing fiction, wrote her first novel, a hospital romance called Purposes of Love. She sold a novel to MGM in 1948, was well paid for it, and she and Julie Millard left England for South Africa, which was more tolerant of homosexuality. Also, it was tax-free. And she kept writing novels that gradually became more explicit in their treatment of gay relationships. Her novel, The Charioteer, 1953, was a gay love story set during the war, and her American publisher refused to publish it. It was on this day, 1893, Beatrix Potter sent a note to a 5-year-old boy, Noel Moore, who was quarantined with scarlet fever, and she said, "I don't know what to write to you, so I shall tell you the story about 4 little rabbits whose names were Flopsy, Mopsy, Cottontail, and Peter." And it's the birthday of Richard Wright, born on a plantation near Natchez, Mississippi, 1908, the author of Black Boy and Native Son, came out in 1940, was made into a Broadway musical. It's required reading at many high schools across the country. Here's a poem for today by Stephen Dobbins, Cézanne's Success. The girls he followed down the street, the heartbreaks he pretended to suffer, the giddy letters he wrote to Zola with pages of bad poetry, bad jokes to conceal his fear of being dull, the self-doubts he laughed about, the shyness overcome by wine. This world began to collapse when he undertook his own inflexible path, his discipline leading him further into isolation. Whoever lacks a taste for the absolute meaning perfection, he wrote, contents himself with mediocrity. His misfortune was his own determined study. Art is a religion. Its aim is the elevation of mind. No jokes, no girls, no wine. The friends stopped calling. Harsh wind at night. No loving hands. Cezanne's Success by Stephen Dobbins from Body Traffic, published by Penguin and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation. You can turn your iPhone or Android into a virtual poetry library with the Poetry Foundation's poetry app. Available to everyone online at poetryfoundation.org/mobile. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
And that was Garrison Keillor with Writer's Almanac. It's Thursday, September 4th. My name is Shona Strausser, and you're tuned in to KTOO Juno Afternoon. This is one of those days, again, that I absolutely love my job. I'd like to welcome into the studio Chef Steph. Hi.
Hello, Shona. Thanks for having me today.
Yeah, sure. So you've got something pretty cool coming up tomorrow, and it's a shortbread tasting and voting.
Yes. For the past 8 years now, I think, at Public Market, I have introduced a new shortbread flavor. And this year, I have decided to let you guys vote. I am a member of the Juno Artist Gallery, the co-op, and I'm the featured artist for First Friday, and I was trying to think of something fun to do, and then I came up with the sampler idea and the voting, because over the years people have suggested or asked for flavors, and I took notes, and then there were flavors that I wanted to try. And what a better way to get opinions and votes and feedback than to sample it, as opposed to like me knocking on all my friends' doors, call them up, I'm like, hey, your next office break, come on over and tell me what you think. So it'll be an easier way of getting everybody to try the shortbread.
Well, speaking of trying shortbread, this is why I have the luckiest job in the world. Not only do I get a visit from Chef Steph, but I also get sample shortbreads, and I get to vote right here on air. I'm going to try to go quick because chewing on air as well, it's difficult. But so far we have four different varieties here, and these are the four that will be there tomorrow?
Yes, and they were top secret until now. You can disclose if you'd like.
I just had the almond. Super yummy. Nutty, obviously. Your shortbread is pretty melt in your mouth. I'm not going to lie.
Oh, well, thank you very much. It was my husband's grandmother's recipe. And when they have a tradition that when the kids got married, the recipe was handed down only if they were accepted into the family. So there are wars. There are people not speaking. So I got the recipe.
Wait, some people didn't get the
recipe?
Some
people didn't get the recipe.
And did the people get married anyway?
They got married, but, you know, it was just saying, we don't like you.
That is hardcore. That is some shortbread hardcore. I just tried the rosemary, and that one is strong and delightful. You know what, there's lots of I spent a lot of time in Seattle. There's lots of rosemary everywhere, and I would just go by and just grab that rosemary, and it tastes like that. It's wonderful.
Oh, thank you. So
are you exclusively making shortbread as part of your business?
The Chef Steph pretty much line. I make shortbread, toffee, granola, seasonal cookies, and the glacial ice cookie, which is like a peppermint bark cookie. And that has been the pretty much the staple. And, next flavor, black pepper, parmesan.
I did coconut curry.
Oh.
Did I get them out of order?
It's okay.
Okay. I did coconut curry. And, wow, that doesn't kind of kick in until a little bit later.
Mm-hmm. It's subtle at first, and then it's subtle throughout, but at the end it creeps up, and then you're like, whoa.
Yeah. And the curry with the sweet, yeah. And actually the coconut, there was something else that was kind of on the tip of my palette. It was like some kind of seed. Was there a seed?
No seed in it. No. You know, it was funny because in the many adaptations, shall we say, like the coconut, there were about five different coconut versions and a few curry versions and everything. I had to remove chunkies because it changed the texture of shortbread. Shortbread is a very texture specific food, So in putting in things, it ended up turning into a cookie instead of shortbread. So you think it's easy coming up with flavors. Oh, no.
No, I mean, because shortbread is what, like butter and lots of goodness, right? And
butter, sugar, flour.
Yeah, so, right.
And love, lots of love.
Apparently so. You are one of the loved ones. So I've narrowed it down. I've narrowed it down to rosemary and coconut curry.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how I came up with that, but those are the ones that are like hitting me pretty
because
hard.
They're different. Mm-hmm. They're different. And at First Friday tomorrow, some of the shortbreads are going to have food in them, like the black pepper parmesan will have something on it. So because it kind of tastes like a cracker, so it can be used as a carrier for other food. So
So you're kind of expanding the shortbread
world.
You're saying no limits on my shortbread.
And showing what can be done with them. You know, you could eat them with just some tea or a beverage or, just a couple of combinations. And in looking for a new flavor, I came up with a new fancy shortbread.
Ooh, and, what does that mean?
Well, I have the salted caramel shortbread, so I take the vanilla shortbread cups, and I fill them with caramel and ganache and sea salt from Sitka, and I package that in a beautiful gold box. I mean, it's a gorgeous gift, and that is one of the flavors that I can't stop eating. It's the salty sweet.
The salty sweet.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? I have to say, salty sweet and spice wins for me.
And that's why you like the coconut curry.
Yeah, exactly.
So people were asking for savory. So I pulled out my Jamaican jerk spice and worked with that. My poor family and my dear friends, who are still my friends after tasting shortbread after shortbread. The table had over 20 flavors. I had to bribe my friends with a dinner. They came over for dinner. I was like, before you get to eat, you have to taste.
Nice. Yeah, well, that's nice. So tomorrow is the voting, and what time are you, and the tasting, and what time will that start, and could you remind us where it is?
Yes. So First Friday, 4:30 to 7, it's the Juno Artist Gallery in the Senate Building on Franklin Street, so next to the Bear's Lair.
Cool. And these are so great. I tried an almond one, a rosemary one, Parmesan black pepper. Hello. Who thought about that? And shortbread. You did. And coconut curry. And for me, the coconut curry is, that's pretty awesome.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Yeah, you know, voting I think will last throughout the month. I'll have samples available. You know, at the gallery is a co-op. So all the members work it and run the gallery. So we all work shifts. So certainly the shifts that I'm there, I'll have the shortbreads out and I'll post it on Facebook to say, hey, if anybody wants to vote or taste. And there will be all of the four flavors will be for sale in a limited edition. So if you find something that you really love, then it may not appear in December, which is not to say it won't ever appear again, but certainly not this year. So if you need to have it, you
now's
can.
Now's the time. Hey, what's your website for people who want to order some other delightful things?
Oh, it's Chef Steps, which is a difficult-sounding name. I did not think of that when I came up with the name, but it's C-H-E-F-S-T-E-F-S. So it was a play on my name because it's Stephanie with an F. And it doesn't come across over the phone and on the air very well, sadly.
Well, Chef Steph, thank you so much for coming in. And definitely get tomorrow to the Juno Artist Gallery, the co-op downtown, to try these. They're fabulous. Every single one of them is great. And you just made me vote, which I had to.
Well, thank you very much. All right. Well, enjoy and hope to see you come on down because there will be lots of other things. That, you know, there's about 24 other artists. The gallery has grown, and the members are great. They have beautiful work there. So come on down. There's other snacks as well.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And here is John Elliott one more time, playing tonight at 7 p.m. at the Gold Town Nickelodeon as part of the KRNN concert series. Thank you.
Trevor's starting a list. My fortune's a fist. Whatever it was, it's gone now. Colorado was dumb. The locals were wealthy. The mountains were white. The people were white. It's a good day to be in the American West. I'm closer to home than I ever get. I'm not through with this yet. I was weak in the winter, stuck in the South. Born in the North with a Catholic mouth. Mother said, son, you're lucky to live here. You're lucky to live here. We had to prove it. We had to beat Britain again. Maybe take Canada too. The Indians sided with them. We won and they left. No apologies yet. No apologies yet. It's a good day to be in the American West. I'm closer to home than I ever get. I'm not through with this yet. I was weak in the winter and stuck in the South. Born in the North.
And that's John Elliott. If you like what you can hear, you can check him out tonight at the KRNN Concert Series, starting up again this fall at the Gold Town Nickelodeon. And it's such a great venue to hear live music. It's small, it's intimate. And Irene Muller is opening for him, a local artist, and you definitely want to check her stuff out, too. Speaking of local artists tearing up our scene.
I thought you were going to be like, speaking of small and intimate.
That's cool. That's a different night. I mean, that's for a different radio show. And we have Christy Nami Erickson in the studio. Welcome.
Well, thank you so much.
So, Christy, you've had some really big things going on in your life lately.
Yeah.
And one of those being a brand new store downtown called The Kindred Post.
Yes. Yeah.
So tell us about it. What's going on?
Well, it's been small and intimate. No, it's actually been not small and intimate. It's been really large and very public. So I don't know what I'm talking about. We've been open for a couple of months now. And, you know, I've been telling people when we opened in July, it was slightly anticlimactic. We kind of just like opened the doors and then we had mail and we just kind of gradually built up our gift shop. And I've always said for the past couple months, you know, it's not going to be real until I party about it. And so I'm ready. I'm ready to have a party. I'm ready to, you know, welcome the community in and just say, you know, we're here. We're excited to be here. Please be a part of this. Be a part of this greater vision that we have for the post office and for a gathering space there on Franklin Street. And I'm really happy to be doing it this first Friday.
That's very cool. So what time is this? You're right. I kind of feel the same way. Things aren't real until you have a party.
It's not real until you party about it. Right? Weddings, okay?
Amen.
Right? A baby shower, you know?
Amen.
Yeah. Congratulations, by the way.
Thanks very much.
Yeah.
So the party is tomorrow. What time?
Yeah, 4:30 to 8. So general, just during the first Friday gallery walk, we're just kind of figuring people are going to be out and about anyway. It's a good excuse to, if you're not a first Fridayer, to come on down. There's a lot going on. If you're a diehard first Fridayer, you know, make this extra stop at this new place, and we hope to be a part of the monthly gallery walks.
Very cool. And will people be able to mail things, or can you only do that during, like, mail hours?
Well, ordinarily, actually, it's been really great. Susan Johnson, the postmaster in town, has been really wonderful as we've been opening up the contract station again and trying to do things a tiny bit differently than before. And so we have evening and weekend hours now, which is not when the regular post office is open, and they've allowed us to be able to continue to accept mail to go out for the next day during those hours. So it's been hugely convenient for a lot of locals who suddenly, you know, some people just got mail stuff at 6 p.m., you know what I'm saying, or Sundays, whatever.
I had no idea.
We are there for you, you
that
know.
Is too
so,
cool.
So ordinarily you could totally mail on a Friday night. We're kind of thinking there's going to be a lot going on, so I think mailing will maybe not be easy to do. I think nobody's going to be like, you can't mail right now. But it may be difficult to, say, access the flat rate boxes with, like, two guys drumming and guitaring and singing their hearts out in front of you. But, you know, everybody's got their ways.
Yeah, I'll get a flat rate box if I need one.
I know, right? Padded flat rate envelope.
Yeah, so it's not just a post, because there's the kindred part of the post. I mean, you know, it's I have to say I have been on a letter writing kick lately.
Ooh, good for you.
And there's something very intimate and kindred about that. Mm-hmm. But it's also, you also have cool stuff there.
Yeah, yeah, we've got a whole gift shop full of a really carefully curated collection. I really liked the alliteration that happened right there. I'm going to start saying that. A carefully curated collection of just modern art, home goods. You know, I wanted to kind of take the what was fresh, what was modern of a lot of what was fresh and modern in terms of makers and designers and artists throughout the country and be able to showcase them there. Kind of this reinvented classic scene that's going on, right? Like a post office, which is almost seen as archaic, right? The art of letter writing, you know. It's a good time to set out all my typewriters or something like that. But, you know, who are we, you know, as fresh, young individuals? What are we creating now? What are we talking about? What are the things that we're making? So we see things that, you know, bear traditions like leather works, letter press, those kind of things, but are done with this new, like, fresh vibe to them. And so that's the type of stuff that we've got curated right now.
So are you searching mostly for independent artists' work in
almost everything in there is by an independent artist. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's been great. I mean, it's a full-time job just trying to curate it, though, you know, trying to find stuff and get it going, but it's totally worth it because then you just get this really eclectic mix. And I'm working with artists who, you know, I talk to on the phone and are like, you know, and they're stoked about it because it's one of their first big orders or whatever. And it's just nice to be able to support a lot of the emerging artists out there.
And pretty cool that, you know, their stuff is coming up to Juno, and they're like, you have a post office
that
has awesome independent... They're probably like, what?
Every artist is pretty stoked about not only coming to Alaska, but coming to a post office, because for a lot of artists, going to the post office is not a fun activity for them. And so they like the idea of sending it to a place that does have a lot of energy and a lot of excitement and a joyful kind of atmosphere to it.
So I know a little bit about kind of your, the history of how you, because your dad is a postmaster, mm-hmm. former postmaster, and I'm just wondering what's been the real impetus behind this, because it's just, you know, it's awesome and a really huge undertaking.
Yeah, absolutely. I've been telling people it's kind of like, it is both the most absurd thing I've ever done in my life, to quit my job and open a post office. Like, a lot of my friends are like, you're doing what? You know, I'm listening, you know. But and it's also, yet simultaneously, people will come in and be like, wow, this really fits you. You know, this, I'm suddenly like, say I'm the postmistress, but I have this like house of letters, right? And as a writer and as somebody who's a community organizer, having something that is founded in art, founded in connection, and in a physical space where I can really start to host events and workshops and things where I can organize around an idea and have people come and gather there. It really is kind of this physical manifestation of a lot of things that I work on. So it's been really wonderful in that way, both crazy and totally predictable all in one.
That's the perfect combination, really.
Yeah, that's how I like to live my life.
Yeah, I mean, it's in the name, Kindred Post. There you
right.
go. So that kind of leads me to I was going to ask this anyway, but so you're looking at events in the future in your space?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, one of the best things about having a space where you're inviting, or you put out the idea, I want to have workshops, I want to have events, is people come and either they have ideas or they'll just be talking to me about the thing that they do. And you can tell when somebody's really passionate about the thing that they do. You know, maybe like, God, I go on the radio and I love it when I talk to people, blah, 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 blah. And I want to tap that. I love listening to people talk about the things they're passionate about. And I like the idea of them sharing that with others. I think that the creative life is not just about, like, the fine arts, right? It's about, you know, I go to hardware and I talk to the woman there about gardening. And the way she talks about gardening, you know, it's like it's just this lovely thing that I never even considered in dirt, you know. But and I invite her. I say, you know, do you want to do a workshop sometime? You know, just an afternoon kind of thing where people can come together and share tips about, you know, how do you get your seeds started in the winter, whatever. But I think that there's kind of an infinite number of experts in all sorts of topics in this town, and I'd love to be able to host different gatherings that help share that kind of knowledge, allow people to create together, learn together, talk with each other, and whatnot at Kindred Post.
Are there services at Kindred Post that are make you go, I can't believe that I offer that service?
Services.
It's fascinating because I just never thought, of course, Christy does postage now. Like,
yeah.
You know, and I know it's not.
It is a little weird. Yeah, to suddenly be hustling stamps, right? Like, it's not like something I ever thought I would do in my life, you know, to negotiate with people a 34 cent versus a 49 cent stamp. But, so there is kind of like that, what do you want to call it? Kind of branch of what we do that does feel a little bit different, but it's exciting. We meet a lot of we meet people from all over the world every single day, and there's a surprising number of people who travel and they visit a post office wherever they go. And those are some of my favorite people. They come and they tell you about, oh, this post office in this town, they don't even have mailmen, so everybody just gathers at the post office. And I was just like, holy cow, like that's what I want to do, man. That's so great.
It is.
You know?
It's the heart of the community.
Yeah, it's really exciting. It's definitely a third place.
And a great article in today's Juno Empire.
That's all Amy. Man, Amy Fletcher is just a great writer.
She is. She's hooking some people up. But it's a great topic, so that really helps.
Yeah. I appreciate that.
So do you make a lot of male jokes now? I mean, is it pun crazy?
Yeah. You know, one of my employees is Connor Lendrum, you know, also a writer. You know, I hired him partly because he's a writer. And we have daily pun offs, I'd say, throughout the day. It's a pretty fun place to work. Between the kind of joyful joking around and creative energy and just all the people, there's just hardly ever a quiet or a dull moment there.
Nice.
Yeah.
You tell us about the party details one more time.
For sure. Kindred Post grand opening party tomorrow night, 4:30 to 8 p.m. We've got music by Ryan Cortez and Ryland Buller. We've got a photo booth by Adam Wood and Jordan Kendall. And we'll have Localvore snacks by Johnny Fishmonger. So come on down, party with us, shake what your mama gave you, and say hello.
Cool. Is there a Facebook? Is there a website? All that
totally.
Good stuff?
You could go to www.kindredpost.com, or you can find us on Facebook or Instagram or Twitter.
Wow, see, you're hooked
all
up.
All the things.
I love it.
All the things.
I love it.
Yeah.
Christy Nami Erickson, always a pleasure, and all the best in your opening, and just congratulations all around.
Thank you so much, Shona. I appreciate that.
Try some of this shortbread on the way out.
Word.
Here is Johnny Elliott. He's playing tonight as part of the KRNN concert series. We're going to hear him one more time.
There in the world tonight, there's a man hungry and sick and frozen with fright, who is trying to cross the United States border. I'm up here on the fourth floor tonight. I'm hungry, I'm sick, and I'm frozen with fright. I'm trying to get my hilarious life in order. And I know what the score is, and I know what a war is. People die in a war, it's all happened before. People die in a war, it's all happened before. Last we spoke, I made a terrible joke. You laughed, but you knew it was a terrible joke. There was a time not that long ago when all of my jokes were good ones. So maybe I lost it in the back of that truck, or that night we swam naked in the lake, and we stuck to each other, and we clutched, and we kissed, and we knew we could make it.
And that's John Elliott. You can check him out tonight at the KRNN concert series happening at the Goldtown Nickelodeon. And there's not a whole lot of seats available, so you want to get down there early. Doors open at 6:30. Check that out. This KRNN concert series, totally awesome. I mean, they're so much fun. Wouldn't you say, Miss Ariel?
Oh, yeah, they are. You don't want to miss it.
That's right. So, Arts Up every Thursday. And today for Arts Up, we have Miss Ariel Rolf. Welcome to the studio.
Thank you. It's good to be here again.
Yeah, so what's going on in town? Because there's quite a bit.
Yeah, it's crazy. I guess winter's in full. We're moving that way anyway. So we've got First Friday coming up tomorrow, and we've got all sorts of things all over town. Alaska Robotics is opening up their First Fridays for the season with Fish, which is a collection of mixed media by Adrian Honerbrink. And then we've got Annie Kale will be showing wildlife and landscape paintings by Natalie Parenteau. Aunt Claudia's Doll Museum will have information by the Northern Lights Junior Theater about the Christmas doll and auditions, and so they're going to feature some new dolls there, and you can bring your children to come and talk about auditions for their new performance.
Have you been there lately?
I haven't
Claudia's
been there
doll.
Lately. Yeah.
It's fun.
It's
a fun place. I always simultaneously get freaked out and excited.
I know. It's like, it's the best place. You know, it's really fun. And Ellen, she has her studio there, too. And so can see, like, the dolls that she's working on. And then COPA has M.K. McNaughton's drawings and paintings that celebrate their one-year anniversary of COPA. We've also got a GCI, Adoptable Pets. So photographs of adoptable pets from the Gatineau Humane Society will be shown, and then light refreshments will be provided.
At GCI?
Yeah, GCI downtown.
Huh, as part of First Friday?
Yeah, so that's one of their things they've started to do First Fridays. I think last month was their first one.
Very cool.
Yeah, so it's kind of an exciting area.
The art of adopting a dog.
Yeah, I know. How can you say no to a cute photo?
I can't. It's
furry
horrible.
Friends.
Yeah.
And then at the Arts and Humanities Council, we've got the photographs of Jordan Kendall, and he does instant analog photography. It's really, really gorgeous work. So he's been working hard this last couple of weeks to make things happen there, and we're really excited to have him. And then I've already had so many of my news pieces come in for the show.
We can hit them again.
Chef Steph will be the shortbread tasting at the Juno Artist Gallery down on Franklin Street. Kindred Post is having her grand opening. You guys just heard from her. And then they're going to have a photo booth there. I'm really excited to take some photos in that photo booth. And then Rookery Cafe. We didn't, I don't know if you've talked to them. So Claire Geldof is a sort of newish artist, and she's never shown here before. She's going to be showing what she's called Tributary, which is 10 installations comprised of 1,000 paper cranes, wood and canvas. And they all celebrate different people in her life and places in her life. So a lot of Juno places and people. And it's a really beautiful, well-done show. And there will be live music by Travis Croteau, and that's tomorrow's opening. And then at Silver Bow, they have a lot of different events throughout the month, and starting with tomorrow night's First Friday, Wild Reads. So you can come and share your favorite wilderness readings. And then there's other events that are sort of corresponding with that throughout the month. And you can get more information from Kevin Hood at kehood@fs.fed.us if you want to participate in any of these. So you can bring your favorite photos at one of the other events. And then tomorrow night's the Wild Reads, though. So.
That sounds like a great time.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah, so it's celebrating the 50th anniversary of the Wilderness Act.
Yeah. So is the DRAC still doing that? Those really cool little First Friday thingies?
Yeah.
So could you explain what a thingy is for me, please?
Yeah. I knew exactly what you're talking about. Sent it to the printer. So we actually put together these First Friday flyers, and they're just little handheld things that you can fit in your back pocket, and they have all of the First Friday events, at least that we know about, on them. And
you
so,
said thing, too.
Oh, did I?
I love it. Yeah, but your thing was much more descriptive than my thing.
Oh, good. So we have them available. They're all over town, actually, but we have the most copies available at the Jack, which is just on Whittier Street, across from K2. And we also have them available online. So you can go to www.jahc.org, and there's a First Friday link. And then K2 has this great mobile app, too, which
Hello.
Is awesome.
It's
yeah,
cool.
It's so slick. I even have copies of it to read from.
You do?
Yeah.
Oh, I love that. So if you definitely hit First Friday tomorrow, usually starts 4 to 4:30, and you know, it could just really go until...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Usually seven, but
usually seven. Yeah. Although, you know,
the
I love the winter
sort of.
Ones because
yeah.
the winter ones can go well into the evening.
Yes. Totally.
So, yeah, check that out at jahc.org. And you know what? We're not going to get to all the other events that are happening this week. We just got to Friday. I know Perseverance Theater's Iliad opens tomorrow as well. So there's just a lot to do in this fine town. So check it out at jahc.org or ktoo.org. Ariel, always a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you. And this is KTOO Juno. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. KTOO also broadcasts on these translators. In the Valley and Auk Bay area, tune to K276 AF 103.1 and Lemon and Schweitzer Creek K269 AO at 101.7. Gustavus listens on K201 AM 88.1. K220 BT serves Hoonah at 91.9. In Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait, hear KTOO on K210 AS 89.9. In Juneau, you can also receive KTOO on GCI Cable Juneau on digital channel 871. We're also online at ktoo.org. Thanks so much for tuning in to Juneau Afternoon. Same time tomorrow, 3 p.m. Have a great day.